Today is Monday, February 7th, 2011. I'm Claire Eagle.
I'm Matthew Willis. This is News 101.
On News 101.
Right here on News 101.
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taking to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective.
You're listening to News 101, Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced, student and community newscast, offering you local, national, and international news from an alternative perspective.
Good evening, it's 5:11 and time for a full hour of independent news. In campus news, we will be bringing you coverage of Pride UBC's Out Week on Now Across Campus. We will also be joined in studio by Aiden Saint, former Mr. Gay Vancouver and host of Queer FM, to discuss the happenings at Whistler Pride, which took place this past weekend.
As well, Adam Yanush will bring us our weekly arts feature, and we'll be talking to Colleen Kimmett from the online magazine, thetaiyi.com. Also on this week is our weekly health segment.
All this plus your weekly weekday weather forecast right here on News 101, your source for independent, local, national, and international news.
But first, the headlines from Free Speech Radio News.
I'm Nell Abram with news briefs for Free Speech Radio News. The Department of Energy announced a $50 million initiative to quickly approve leases for offshore wind farm development along the U.S. East Coast. The program will speed up environmental reviews of four sites that are 10 to 20 miles off of mid-Atlantic beaches in Virginia, Maryland, Delaware, and New Jersey. According to Agence France-Presse, Haitian officials have issued a passport to former President Jean-Bertrand Aristide, paving the way for his return for the first time since he was forced to leave the country in 2004. And Haiti's current president will stay in office an extra 3 months, despite today's official expiration of his term. According to his chief of staff, President René Préval will not name a temporary successor, but will remain until May 14th. A presidential runoff vote between Mirland Manigat and Michel Martelly is scheduled for March 20th. Fighting over a 900-year-old temple continued today along the border between Thailand and Cambodia. Ron Corbin reports from Bangkok.
In a statement to the United Nations, Thai Prime Minister Pisit Wechichoa categorically rejected Thailand's troops started the firefights that began last Friday. Mr. Pisit said Thailand had acted in self-defense, calling the Cambodian attacks blatant violations of Thai sovereignty. Panattan Wattaniagorn is the Thai government spokesman.
We have instructed the military to respond when attacked to specific military targets only.
Cambodian Prime Minister Hun Sen earlier Monday said he wanted UN peacekeepers. Over 15,000 Thais have been relocated from the border. The Cambodian government says part of the temple has been damaged. Both sides blame each other for the fighting, but independent confirmation of the attacks is limited due to restricted access to the region. In 1962, the International Court of Justice ruled the Prea Vira temple belonged to Cambodia. But the surrounding areas remain in dispute. Clashes have increased since 2008 after the temple was granted World Heritage listing. Ron Corbin, FSRN, Bangkok.
In Bangladesh, a general strike over escalating prices shuttered schools and businesses today. The shutdown was called by the Bangladesh Nationalist Party, or BNP, who accused the government of failing to control the financial market. Prime Minister Sheikh Hasina denies responsibility for a recent market crash. According to Al Jazeera, some 10,000 riot police are firing tear gas and arresting people in a number of cities across the country. For Free Speech Radio News, from Tampa, Florida, I'm Nell Abram.
Thanks to FSRN for bringing us those headlines. Daily headlines and their full newscast can be found at FSRN.org. Now it's time for our own News 101 headlines. In campus news, UBC Okanagan biology professor Soleil Mahmoud and his team of researchers have successfully cloned a gene. This gene produces beta-phylandrine, which is best known for its presence in the essential oils of some lavender species. Dr. Mahmoud hopes to further research on how plants store and produce natural products and see whether this plant production could be controlled.
In campus news, at the Subs Bar and Lounge, The Gallery, the weekly event known as Toonie Tuesdays has been discontinued. The gallery's promotion, $2 for a pint of beer, was expecting to increase business at the Sub during the two-week trial of Toonie Tuesdays, which was ended just last week, likely not ever to return again. The cancellation was caused by both economic and legal concerns. AMS President Bijan Atmadian said that the profits were not very high to begin with, and the need for more staff made the event harder to justify economically. The RCMP reported that numerous issues involving minors were occurring at the gallery. Sergeant Kevin Kennis stated, quote, "I was concerned by the fact that cheap beer is always potential for things to go sideways," unquote. With more food deals, programs, and karaoke on the list of plans for future gallery promotions, VP Ellen Tayar referred to, quote, "the war on fun," unquote, as a serious issue that we'd better start looking at different kinds of fun, considering the RCMP and Liquor Commission aren't getting any more lenient.
In more campus news, Dr. Perry Adbar, who is a structural engineering professor here at UBC, has expressed his concern regarding high-rise buildings in BC in a special article to the Vancouver Sun. He referred to a group of BC engineers who went to Chile recently to examine the construction of many of the damaged buildings following the large earthquake that occurred there last year. They found that many of the buildings in Chile were damaged were actually brand new, but they all featured thinner concrete shear walls. Back at UBC, tests were conducted to determine the compression strain capacity of these walls, where they found that they failed at about one-third of the predicted level. This is relevant as a number of BC buildings use these walls, and in addition to this, many buildings were constructed decades ago before the current regulations came into place. Dr. Adibar says that a change to the building code will be required for 2015, especially as in BC, we do not experience many small earthquakes to test buildings prior to the event of a large earthquake. The Canadian Seismic Research Network was recently created, with one of its goals being to develop guidelines for evaluation and retrofit of existing buildings in British Columbia, and UBC has committed a significant number of resources to this project. Says Dr. Adibar, quote, "We welcome the involvement of other organizations or individuals to help ensure that all structures in BC will be reasonably safe in the event of a damaging earthquake," end quote.
In campus news, the annual increase of tuition has come upon us again. Up till now, the government and university has been content with a 2% increase in tuition. Most of these changes are not too harsh to domestic students, but the debate over international student fees is still hot and going. International undergrads out of commerce pay at least $21,000 a year, which is at least the third highest rate in Canada, or the second highest in the arts program. There is good news, however. While international rates are going up about 4%, there is a guarantee that future hikes will only go up 2%. Despite how long this move has taken, it should be applauded nonetheless.
In local news, Elizabeth May, leader of Canada's Green Party, her office in Saanich was significantly damaged this past Saturday when a truck crashed into the building, destroying the front wall and shattering the plate glass windows. Thankfully, no one was injured. However, this neighborhood is still concerned about the Quadra Tattersall intersection due to this and another incident that occurred last fall when a car crashed into the appliance store located adjacent to the office. Jonathan Dickey has expressed his hardened concerns, saying that the crash couldn't have come at a worse time, with a possible federal election looming very soon, and that the location of the now-destroyed office was great for organizing our volunteers. However, the Saanich Gulf Islands campaign continues to be strongly grounded at their second office located towards the north end of the riding in Sydney, where local residents should rely for both help and information.
This week at Out Week at UBC, put on by Pride UBC, we are joined in studio by Out Week coordinator Andrew Rice. Thanks, Andrew, for being here.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So, tell us about what's going on during Out Week and some of the events that are going on.
So Out Week is a week-long celebration of Pride and Pride UBC at UBC. We have every day we have events in the daytime and the nighttime. So I think our biggest focus would be on the nighttime events. We have a movie showing tonight at the Norm Theater in the Sub, which will be about an hour of a documentary from Seattle. Tomorrow night we have an academic panel where queer researchers will present their papers, and then we have a wine and cheese reception following that, and that's in the Grad Study Center penthouse, which is a really nice room. Wednesday night we're having a night out at Celebrities with a drag queen bingo. That'll be fun. Thursday night we're having a gay improv group called The Boppers come to the Sub for a performance. And then Friday night we're having our big bash in the Sub ballroom. It's a 1920s themed stock crash. It'll be lots of fun. It's a dinner and dance, and it's all ages.
Oh, that sounds awesome. So what are some of the changes you have from this year compared to last year?
Definitely trying to get more people aware, have a better communication, advertisement, just getting the news out there. I think we've already had a really good response this year. So, and we also tried to have more workshops. So during the day we have drag workshops, sexual health workshops, positive space workshops, just everything revolving around queer tolerance and queer issues, and I think that'll be really successful this year.
So I guess, why do you think, why is Out Week so important at UBC? Why should people get involved?
Out Week is important because it raises the visibility of Pride UBC to all students on campus, whereas maybe the rest of the year only people who are in with Pride really know what's going on. And it's also an opportunity for the community to get involved in Pride UBC. We have today in the Awareness Fair in the Sub, we had community organizations and guests come in and show off their talk about what they do in the community. And we have people coming in for workshops for like sexual health and stuff like that really help the community get involved in UBC and show that there is a thriving Pride community at UBC, and works vice versa too, because it allows people in Pride UBC to meet members of the community outside of UBC.
Well, that sounds great. So, Andrew, what are some of the things that you've done yourself, though, during Out Week? Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, me and my partner, Martina, our coordinators, we're just emailing people, trying to set everything up, getting all the bookings done. So it's just been like a crazy few months getting everything together for this 1 week. But I think it'll be worth it. I think it'll be a good payoff.
Oh, okay. Sounds good. Is there anything else you'd like to have people know or point out?
I'd just like to say that it's welcome for everyone. You don't have to be gay, lesbian, transgender, bisexual, anything. It's welcome for everyone, non-UBC students as well. And I think everyone should definitely check out our bash on Friday night if you just feel like having a fun party. It's all ages, no alcohol, dinner included in the price. It'll be great.
Okay, well, everyone, I hope you attend. Thanks, Andrew, so much to have you in the studio today. We're going to take a quick break, but stay with us. I'm Matthew Willis, and we're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Entered into a secret conspiracy in which secret government contracts are sold to Big Pharma that allow for secret chemicals to be placed in coffee seeds, all under the watchful eye of Big Coffee, who is secretly working with other world forces, all in a sinister plot to get alien embryos in our coffee so Big Pharma can sell us alien contraceptive pills. Or, if you'd rather get some rational news, check out Radio Free Thinker, the radio show / podcast that promotes skepticism, critical thinking, and science education. Every Tuesdays at 4 p.m. on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Welcome back to News 101. I'm Claire Eagle. This past weekend, Whistler hosted its own Pride Week. Queer FM host and former Mr. Gay Vancouver, Aiden Saint, did a live broadcast from Whistler over the weekend, and he's here in the studio with us today to tell us about what went down over there. So, Aiden, thanks for being in here today.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So, tell us about your weekend. How was it?
Well, it was an amazing weekend. My husband, Justin, and I, and Samantha Mack, who hosts Queer FM and Queer FM Arts Extra, all went up and had a fabulous time. We went up on Thursday and just got there in time to catch last comic standing runner-up, Michelle Balin from New York City. And it just got crazier from there. It really did.
So what were some key events that went down there? I know you were there for...
Well, Tyra Sanchez, last year's winner of Drag Race, was there. and a rather statuesque drag queen. If you can imagine someone who's about 7 feet tall, oh, can leap into the air a good 2-3 feet and land in the splits. It was amazing. It was really amazing. And they just had so many events. It was so professional, from Ferocious, which was a huge party for men, to Fly Girl Productions put on some great lesbian events. There was Purlesque with Diamond Minx and Maggie Pye, and they were their local Vancouver burlesque performers. They were fantastic. And the snowball dance at the end, it actually snowed inside while it was snowing outside. Wow. The entire event was so professionally done. Queer FM even had our own radio lounge with white leather couches. All in all, a great event. There was some controversy around the sled dog races. Mm-hmm. Some dogs were put down 9 months ago in a not particularly humane fashion, mm-hmm. and there were some repercussions from that, but about 3,000 people attended. It was very major.
So is this an expansion from previous years, or is this about what they had predicted?
It's about what they predicted. We had great help from Dean Nelson, the CEO of Whistler Pride. And next year is their 20th anniversary, so it just seems to keep getting bigger and bigger as time goes on.
Wow, that sounds great. I guess, did you cover it last year as well? Or
no, this was our first year, and they were just fantastic. I think the thing that really struck me was the number of people from around the world that come to Gay Ski Week. And it started off as a very, very small event in protest of the treatment of gays and lesbians in Colorado. They were invited to Whistler, and the rest is history.
Wow, that sounds great. I guess hopefully with the 20th anniversary coming up as well, they'll continue to grow.
2012 is expected to be quite a bit larger. Probably 2,000 extra people will descend upon Whistler. And it's a great place to be yourself. A lot of people have really planned their entire year around this. In fact, it was my honeymoon. So it was even extra special for me.
Mm-hmm. I guess, keeping that in mind, were there any particular events that were highlights for you beyond, I guess, the events themselves or the key players there?
I think one of the best events was some of the après-ski events were great to get to meet people. Although I have to say, Ferocious was pretty amazing. One of the local drummers here for Zara was there. And, well, I've never seen a drummer jam with a disc jockey before.
Oh, wow.
Which was pretty amazing. Beyond that, just the sheer number of people that came, as I said, from around the world, meeting, talking to someone from Seattle, someone from New Zealand, and someone from Africa all at the same time.
That's pretty great. I mean, how do they get their promotions out that far? I mean, I think Pride's something that's happening more and more around the world now, and I think it seems like they've done a really great job of promoting their events and who they are globally.
They really have. Dean Nelson, again, has done a fantastic job. In fact, I have the booklet here, and there's the advertisement for Whistler Pride 2012.
Oh, wow.
And just the sheer number, look at the number of supporters and sponsors. It's astounding. I actually had to take pictures of the main poster of all the supporters. The poster, small print, was about 9 feet tall.
Oh, my goodness.
With all the different logos of all the different groups. It was a fantastic event, and I highly recommend that even if you don't ski like I don't, you can go and have a great, great time at Whistler. And it was great to see so many people come out and show their pride.
Great. Well, we're excited to see what they do for 2012. So thanks for coming in with us, Aiden, and I hope you have more fun weekends like that one. I'm sure they won't match up.
Well, thank you so much, and please come on out. It's one of those things that gay, straight, bi, doesn't matter. Come out and have some fun.
All right. Sounds great. We'll definitely keep that in mind.
And again, thank you for being with us, Aiden. Unfortunately, Daniel Casanova can't be here with us today, so here's your weekly weather forecast brought to you by UBC Storm Club. For tonight, windy with 40% chance of showers overnight, low of 3. Tuesday, small chance of showers in the morning, clearing in the afternoon, high 6, low 3. On Wednesday, sunny, high of 6, low of -2. Thursday, cloudy, high of 5, low of 0. Friday, unfortunately, rain, high of 7, low of 3. Saturday, again, rain, high of 7, low of 4. And Sunday, you guessed it, rain, high of 7, low of 3.
So that was your weekly weather forecast brought to you by the Storm Club BBC. And we're going to take a quick break, but stay with us. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.
Theatre at UBC presents the world premiere of Double Double, Foil and Fumble, a farcical, intelligent, whirlwind play written by MFA candidate Ren Hanman and directed by Hersey Innett. Double Double, Foil and Fumble follows the story of five friends who get together to weave some magic, only none of them know what they're doing, half of them don't believe in magic, and some of them have ulterior motives. Add in some gender-bending reality shifts and you've got yourself a fabulous evening in the theatre. Admission is by donation, with all proceeds going to Positive Space at UBC. Double Double, Foil and Fumble plays February 9th to the 12th in Dorothy Somerset Studio on UBC campus. Showtime is 7:30 p.m., 6:30 on February 11th.
Want a great way to spend your pre-Valentine's Day season? Want to support local organizations which help marginalized women and survivors of sexual violence? Want to laugh, cry, and scream C-U-N-T at the top of your lungs with 400 other audience members? Well, why not check out UBC V-Day's 2011 productions, A Memory, A Monologue, A Rant, A Prayer, and The Vagina Monologues. These shows run alternate nights in the Freddie Wood Theater from Tuesday, February 8th to Saturday, February 12th. Showtime is 8 p.m. with a 2 p.m. matinee on the Saturday. With humor, narrative, live music, and dildo fights, these two incredible shows delve into sexuality, violence, and women's empowerment in poignant, diverse ways. Buy tickets outside the sub from 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday to Friday or online at Brown Paper Tickets, event number 139526 and event number 139597.
Surfing? Kind of makes me think of a beach.
UBC Surf is throwing an Ibiza beach party February 10th at Caprice Nightclub. Tickets are only $5 for UBC Surf members and $10 for non-members. Get yours by visiting the club office in Sub 115. The UBC Surf Ibiza party starts at 9 and goes into the night February 10th at Caprice Nightclub.
Welcome back to News 101. I'm Matthew Willis. And now we have a health clip from health reporter Sharon Hundle. In campus health news today, our health correspondent Sharon Hundle spoke with a member of the Science Wellness Fair Planning Committee. And here's that interview. Coming up to you.
The planning committee for the first annual Science Wellness Fair at UBC. So she's here to talk to us about what this entire event is all about. Hi, Paige.
Hi, Sharon. I'm really excited for the Science Wellness Fair that's happening this week because we're going to showcase all these different aspects of keeping a healthy lifestyle, and we're especially targeting science students because we want them to get involved in how they can achieve their healthy balance within their life.
Nice. Sounds good. So could you tell me what the science fair is all about? Like, what can students look forward to when they're at the event?
Well, we have a ton of fun activities planned. One of the main things we're going to have going on is a resource fair. So at this resource fair, we have a lot of on-campus groups as well as community groups who will be available to talk to students about different aspects of health. So everything from chiropractors to the Canadian Mental Health Association will be there. Also, we'll have a lot of fun stuff going on as well. Upstairs, we'll be doing fun activities such as Wii Fit or Xbox Connect. We'll also have an obstacle course. And also, of course, we're going to have free food, but it's going going to be super nutritious, so things like a make-your-own granola stand. And we also have some neat prizes, so if you come, you could win one of them.
Wow, sounds like a lot going on. So who else is involved with putting this all together? Because it seems like it's a big event.
Yeah, it's definitely quite a big event. There's a couple of main groups who are involved in putting this together. So the Wellness Peers at UBC, they're from the Wellness Center in the Sub. They'll be putting it on, as well as the Science Undergraduate Society is involved, as well as the Science Peer Academic Coaches and Sci Team and Healthy Minds UBC. But of course, we're inviting all students to come. So even if you're not a science student, feel free to drop them by. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Oh, that's really nice that it's inclusive of everyone. So, what booths and campus resources will we see at the fair specifically?
Well, there's some really cool people who will be showing up. For example, on Thursday, we'll have the massage therapist there, so you can take a break from all the school stress and get a nice massage. Or on Wednesday, we'll have other groups, like people to talk about sexual health or drugs and alcohol and nutrition. Throughout both days, we'll have people like the dietetic students, as well as the Canadian Mental Health Association will be there, and the Sexual Assault Support Center, and a lot more other on-campus groups and community groups as well. So drop on by on both days. There's going to be a lot of resources there with a lot of people with a lot of interesting things to say.
Totally. So you actually mentioned quite a few different areas of health, sexual health and stuff like that. What do you think is the greatest issue for science students specifically?
I think for science students, we tend to get very focused on academics and we forget to think about the other aspects of a healthy lifestyle. So, for example, we might eat a quick meal without thinking about what we're eating. So I definitely recommend that students come, because I know that, for example, the dietetic students will be doing nutrition assessments, mm-hmm. and we'll also have other groups on hand to talk about healthy eating and quick, easy ways. So it's not going to be difficult, and just people there who are going to be able to help out.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. It's all about balance, which is what I like as well. So now let's break down the details. It seems like it's a two-day event, and maybe you could tell us about the timing and, you know, who's invited and everything.
Exactly. So everyone is invited throughout both days. The events are going to start at 11 on both days. So the first day being Wednesday the 9th and Thursday the 10th. So the event will run from 11 to 2, and it's going to be at the Lada Center, which is right across from the Sub. And there's going to be a lot going on, so definitely make sure to drop them by. And as we said before, everyone is welcome. So even if you're not a science student, feel free to drop them by. And as a special bonus, we even have a keynote speaker coming in on the Thursday. So his name is Ronnie Baker, and he's an executive director of the Canadian Mental Health Association. And he'll be speaking at 1:30 on Thursday the 10th at LADA for all the interested students out there.
Oh, I'll definitely try and stop by for the keynote speaker. And one reason that I'm looking forward to coming as well is I heard that there's a grand prize that you could win. Do you have any inside information on what that could be?
Oh, inside information. Well, I can say one thing. I know it's going to have a lot to do with food. So I know in there's going to be a gift card to the UBC Food Services, as well as there may or may not be a fondue set involved, and as well as other goodies. So definitely come on by. Also, if you complete our wellness challenge, everyone's going to get a little prize and entered into our grand prize draw. So everyone's going to leave a winner.
Okay, sounds good. So more information can be found on the Peer Programs website under events. Thank you very much, Paige, for doing this interview.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks.
And for more information, please visit the website peerprograms.ubc.ca/events.
And so now we're going to go to our weekly arts clip from Adam Yanush, who will be discussing the upcoming play Peter Panties.
Mixed and reinvented version of Peter Pan, with some Macbeth thrown in for a little spice. It's the brainchild of Niall McNeil, a talented artist with Leaky Heaven Circus, one of Vancouver's most creative and ambitious theater companies, in collaboration with Marcus Youssef of New World Theater, another one of the city's best creative forces. So I snuck into a rehearsal of Peter Panties at the Progress Lab last week and managed to pull the two of them away for an interview, where Niall and Marcus talk about their unique teamwork style. They talk about the show's original look and feel, and they talk about how this is not a children's Peter Pan story.
We're doing awesome this year. We got a bigger cast,
The show will be strictly just for adults, not for children to see. 18 or under. The show is great, and my main problem is I'm a little pressured. Pressured.
It is a high pressure time for us now, hey? Like, it's a really, it's, this is the time. Like, Niall and I have, have spent a year and a half, and Niall has been working on this thing with various artist friends for a long time, this Peter Pan.
I've been writing this since the 6 years. Mm-hmm. And I work at the Lick of Heaven, mostly. The Pogos Lab is not really the Lick of Heaven office. It's only for feeders and have fun.
That's right. So now, remind you that where we are right now, Progress Lab, that's actually the New World space, but we also work at the Leaky Heaven space sometimes. In terms of how we developed it, it was really kind of an awesome, or one of my, it's been one of my favorite creative processes ever. Niall and I would get together about once a week for a couple hours, and we would just talk about Peter Pan, and Niall would talk about things that he thought should happen in the script. I'd ask him questions about that, and then he would make up songs sometimes, and I would write them. I videoed everything.
Okay.
And then I took, I have hours and hours and hours and hours of video, and transcribed all that video and then edited it into a script that is what these guys are working with right now, this fantastic company of actors and Lois and Steve.
Interesting. Would you say you're almost like a curator for Niall's ideas?
Well, my job is like, I would say that like there's many different kinds of co-writing. This kind of co-writing involves editing. That's kind of what it's been, because we have, and organizing. That's the sort of function that I've done as a co-writer. And also, I'd say, like, asking you a lot of questions. Like, oh, okay, so if Wendy dies, which she might in our version of Peter Pan, how does she die? Like, what happens? Like, how does that happen? And I had some ideas about that.
I do have some answers why she died, too. One is from drowning. Two, Captain Hook loses Hook to turn Wendy's heart. And number three, he's a bad guy. The whole story is about not merely Hook, how about just Wendy?
That's right, it's kind of about Wendy. And the interesting thing about Hook, like in our version, or one of the interesting things I think of, or thinks is really interesting, is Hook isn't just Hook, he's also Macbeth. Which, when you think about it, makes a whole lot of sense. Like, Hook and Macbeth have a tremendous number of similarities, if you think about it. And that's kind of the way the script works in many ways, is that there are kind of associations or connections between things that that Nye has seen that I wouldn't have necessarily seen ever. But when Nye jams them or says them, I go, oh, right. Oh, my God, that's awesome. That's such a great idea. And that's a lot of our process has been kind of like that.
Okay, so we're quickly running out of time, but I wanted to touch a little bit on the staging or the look and feel of the show. From what I managed to sneak a look at, it's a very, I don't know how to describe it, kind of sprawling in the way that, you know, it's visual, it's got music, there are things hanging from the ceiling, there's glowing tables. Can you tell me a little bit about all the variety?
Elements.
Yeah, all the different
elements. Well, it's really interesting. I mean, we're just discovering it right now. Steve and Lois are really into kind of like a highly visual interpretation of this. Okay. Veda Hilly, the absolutely wonderful singer-songwriter, has written some extraordinary songs for the show based on lyrics that Niall and I, well, Niall really wrote and I shaped, and then Veda reshaped and then wrote music for them. There's a band of teenage boys called the Bank Dogs who play with Veda. And it is this kind of, I think you hit it exactly right, this kind of very rich, complicated world, which when you think of Peter Pan, you may not necessarily imagine. You may see a cartoon in your head or Mary Martin in that kind of stagey adaptation from the 50s, or a Hollywood movie, like a good Hollywood movie, but a Hollywood movie like Finding Neverland or something.
Sorry, I just, there's another version of Peter Pan too, is Kathy Wibby. And she is incredible. As what Marcus says, the music, it's the Bank Dogs, teenagers are really great to be with, and they're rock on, and they're very funny.
They do rock on, I agree.
And like I said, the staging, what you said about staging is not very, it's not too far away from the audience. It's from 18, what, younger? From 8.
I know, Niles, really, you're really concerned that kids don't come, eh?
No, I do. I do want the kids to come. It's only from 18 and under. Like, let's say I'm 28. Zach is what? How old is
16.
16 and
one of the bank dogs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it does under 16.
Yeah, no, it's not your kids, Peter Pan.
Yeah.
That's for sure. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, my kids are in the show, so I don't worry about it so much. But there's definitely, like, if someone brought their 5-year-old expecting, like, you know, Disney, they'd be very surprised.
Yeah, it's
and
like
probably not very happy.
Like four or six, no, yeah. Not its best thing not to have. But I'm looking forward to just be open, up and running.
And that was Niall McNeil and Marcus Youssef talking about Peter Panties, which is starting up on February the 2nd and will run for a while until February the 13th, which is longer than the Push Festival itself. So I guess a bit of a bonus run, and that's going to be at the Kulch.
Thank you, Adam, and welcome back to News 101. I'm Matthew Willis.
And I'm Claire Eagle. So we're now going to be talking to Colleen Kimmett from the online magazine, thetie.com, to follow up to her story last week about internet metering. So, Colleen, thanks for being with us today.
You're welcome. And I just like to point out it's thetie.ca.
Sorry, Colleen. Thetie.ca. So tell us, what happened with net metering? I know we had you in last week to talk about what was happening and that entire, like the petition especially, that really got the ball rolling on that. But what's happened since then?
Well, since then, the federal conservative government basically told the CRTC that it has to reverse this decision to allow net metering, go back to the drawing board, or else the federal government would force it to reverse that decision. And so this was after a very public campaign by openmedia.ca and their petition Stop the Meter that garnered, I think, more than 400,000 signatures at last count. And so that's where it's at now. It's gone back to the drawing board. And, Michael Ignatieff, the federal Liberal leader, basically said the Liberals were coming out publicly opposed to the net metering decision because we heard you. We heard this groundswell of public outcry against it.
And I guess, what is the political significance of both the Liberals and also, I guess, Tony Clement and industry saying that the CRTC had to go back to the drawing board? I know I've heard a lot of criticisms that this is just sort of a ploy that they're playing because they feel that election time may be coming up. I mean, do you think this is true, or do you think that they really do believe the CRTC needs to change the way they're looking at net metering?
I think it's possibly true. I think it's significant because the CRTC doesn't often garner that much public attention. I mean, these are sort of policy wonkish decisions that, you know, don't capture the interest of a lot of people. But this issue in particular got a lot of attention. And today, actually, TIE editor David Beers took part in an online debate on the Globe and Mail's website, saying that part of the reason this revolt has happened is because the large telecom companies like Bell haven't convinced the public that they're actually playing it straight, that this outcry is a result of massive distrust in these large corporations.
I think I can definitely see that, and I think it's definitely a fact. I think it's an issue that people really don't know that much about, and I think that when it did come out that the possibility of having to pay per byte, it was sort of almost like a sideswipe for a lot of consumers. They didn't really realize that was possible. But I guess I have also heard the argument that, like, Bell and Rogers and so on, they are for-profit corporations, and if they don't make a profit, the CEO can be fired. I guess that's an argument I've heard for the inclusion of net metering. So I guess what do you and David Beers, I guess what's the perspective on that?
Well, smaller the executives of smaller internet service providers have said that, look, the actual costs incurred for additional usage is pennies. David Buffett, the CEO of Radiant, a small ISP, said the cost associated with transmitting 1 gigabyte of information on the network is about 5 cents. And, you know, what Bell and other large telecom companies are proposing is that they could charge $2, which is about a 400% markup on that extra gigabyte.
Wow. So I guess, do you see this, what do you see the CRTC coming out with in the future then? What do you think their new idea is going to be?
That, I'm really not an expert on the CRTC, so that I can't speculate on. But I think, you know, they will be certainly more cautious, and hopefully we'll take the time to deliberate what's really best for Canadian internet consumers.
Great, thanks.
Hi, Colleen. Matthew here. I heard that there was an interesting online discussion with your editor, David Beers, on net metering and the Globe and Mail. Just can you enlighten us about that?
Sure. Well, I mentioned some of the points that were made in that discussion. I think particularly the one, you know, bringing up different internet service providers, even some who joined into the conversation to comment and say, yeah, you know, it actually doesn't cost as much as these telecom companies are saying to provide those extra gigabytes, and you know, this is really gouging. Another point that was brought up was that it's basically internet marketing infrastructure costs are basically a black box. As Beers described it, there isn't good data coming out, and the data that is coming out is coming from the service providers themselves. So there's no checks and balances as to whether that information is really accurate.
Switching gears, I guess then there's this sort of funny story about a standalone public urinal. The first one in North America being installed in Victoria. Thoughts, criticisms, anecdotes? I don't know.
Yeah, these are the kind of stories that tend to go viral on the Tyee and I think any other site. It's a urinal designed by a Vancouver-based architect named Matthew Sewells. And it's, to quote Adele Weider, who wrote the article, she says, the average North American city has grotty underground bogs, plastic porta-potties, and full-service washroom buildings, but nothing that could be called a true standalone, permanent, European-style pissoir is the word. It's actually quite, it's sort of a curving structure made of bars. It's actually, if you go to the site, the Tyee.ca, it's our cover story, you can see what it looks like. I also found it interesting, the comments on this story were pointing out that, oh, this is great for men, but what about women and people with disabilities who can't use it? And I think that, you know, when we talk about public infrastructure, people with disabilities especially are left out of the discussion. You know, they have, obviously, they need more space, they need ramps, they need different facilities, or facilities that can accommodate their needs.
So is there any speculation, or is anything that you've heard of making more of these? I mean, it's the first in North America, and some of the issues are, you know, getting government funding. Because, I mean, you say government funding for an outdoor urinal, that probably doesn't bode over well with taxpayers. Is there any speculation about building more of those, or perhaps making them available for disabled people or women, or just having more public pissoirs, as it were?
Well, not for women or disabled people in particular, but Adele Weider notes in the article that architect Bruce Karskadon is crafting a series of outdoor urinals at Vancouver's Rec Beach, including a standalone pissoir and a nine-holer, which is shop talk for a multi-basin lavatory. So that will be interesting to see for sure. And she also notices, why would the denizens of a nude beach require such discretion is intriguing.
Well, it does sound like a lot of fun there, Colleen. Thanks, as always, for coming on the air with us today.
Okay, you're welcome.
Great, have a good evening.
Bye.
Bye-bye. So thanks, as always, to Colleen Kimmett from the online magazine, thetaiyi.ca. For more information on the online net metering or on the outdoor pissoir, the first standalone public urinal in North America and Victoria, you can check out thetaiyi.ca.
And that's our program for February 6, 2011. Today's newscast was brought to you entirely by volunteer efforts. If you'd like to share your comments, get involved with the show, give us a hot news tip, please contact us. Our phone number is 604-822-5334, or you can send us an email at news@citr.ca. Also, be sure to follow us on Twitter with the same username, CITR News. You can subscribe to our podcast and listen to past shows at CITR.ca. For more news, join us on Friday at 5 p.m. for another edition of News 101. I'm Matthew Willis.
And I'm Claire Eagle.
Today's show was produced by Iqbal Ahmed and Hatch Clymer. Thanks also to Jess Landing. For the entire news team at CITR, thanks for listening. Stay tuned for Career Fast Track at 6 p.m. right here on CITR 101.9 FM in Vancouver.